Now back to D-Day. Mission Liberation. With Richard Dowdell.
The early days of June 1944 found the weather horrible both in the channel and across at the landing sites. Thousands of troops were at staging areas or in ships awaiting the go order.
Now the ships are sealed and we wait. The troops swarmed up the rope ladders last night. Strong, healthy, formidable men, many of them going into battle for the first time.
Lieutenant Wilson Prickett, who settled after the war in Norman, knew the invasion was on as he was packed onto a bulging troop ship.
We were offloaded onto the trucks, taken down to Portsmouth. And there were thousands of men lined up in long lines, boarding all kinds of craft, preparing for the invasion.
When we got out there, it just put goose pimples all over you. There was hundreds of planes all over this particular field.
Bob Stalbores, a native Tulsan, rested on the tarmac of a British airfield with thousands of other paratroopers.
We could sleep in the hangars if we wanted to, but we were all prepared to go on the 4th, and then they canceled it because of the weather, and then on the 5th they said, well, tonight's the night. We had in plane that night.
It starts on an airfield, this story. It starts on an airfield where the paratroops kneel around their padre in prayer before emplaning. With bent heads and on bent knees, the men, with their equipment and camouflaged faces, look like some strange...
There was a small break in the bad weather. General Eisenhower took a chance, and the invasion was on.
Now the ships are sealed, and we wait. The troops swarmed up the rope ladders last night. Strong, healthy, formidable men, many of them going into battle for the first time. At every minute of the day and the night, the ship and the men aboard her are alert. Plans of immense complexity are being studied, and every man, soldier or sailor, is learning to the last detail the part that he himself has to play.
On the eve of this great adventure, I send my best wishes to every soldier in the Allied team. To us is given the honor...
Shortly after midnight, Bob Stalbores and other members of the 82nd Airborne trapped in parachutes and flying toward the French coast.
And then when we got in the air, you could just kind of see the outlines of just hundreds of planes in the air, you know, and circling around southern England there. And you thought of all the 20,000 paratroopers in the air at the same time, British and American. The thing that got me, we were just going over the English Channel. And for a minute or two, we were looking out the windows, and you could see the wake of the boats down below you.
He's not so handsome, he's not very tall. And in the
back home, there's still no word that it's D-Day. Americans, like the people in other Allied nations, think about those overseas and wonder what they're doing.
Of mine.
The weather wasn't good when we went in the night of the 5th.
Melvin Swaim, his thoughts far from his hometown of Tulsa, was a member of the crew of a C-47 troop air carrier.
We got about halfway across the peninsula, the Cherbourg Peninsula. Clouds began to cover the ground and that made you sweat, but we were under orders not to break formation if we were attacked or shot at or had any trouble. Just hang in there because your troops was getting ready to stand up. They wouldn't be belted to their seats and they were on their static lines. And we were not allowed to take evasive action at all. In unarmored aircraft, we come in at treetop level, but it had to be at least 1,500 feet when we started dropping our troops.
Elements of the 82nd and 101st Airborne were dropped onto the Normandy pasture land by planes like Swaim's. These American troops and similar British units were going in under the cover of darkness behind enemy lines.
Their mood was expect the worst and hope for the best. And they was very courageous men, they were.
La direction du gouvernement de la France. Je fais à la France.
Even as the Allied troops were boarding transports, the action had already started. Radios hidden away in the cellars of French homes, behind trap doors, or buried deep in a barrel of flour, crackled the coded messages. French resistance forces received word this was D-Day. Immediately, pre-planned operations were carried out. German communication lines were cut, and diversionary efforts put into place.
Je ne peux vous donner l'impression que d'un enfant, enfin d'un adolescent,
Bernard Roquet grew to serve as a deputy mayor of Bayeux. He was a young boy at the time of the German occupation.
There were people dying all over, but to a young boy this really didn't come to mind. Monsieur Roquet also says that they had gone through 4 years of occupation, and as a citizen of the town of Bayeux, he and the others could not, for example, walk on the sidewalk when a German soldier was there. They had to walk in the gutter. The Germans would make them walk in the gutter as opposed to on the sidewalk. So the liberation brought an end to all of that, and for them, again, as a young boy, it was simply a big fate.
The first Allied troops on French soil in the early moments of the invasion were part of the British 6th Airborne Division. These were airborne commandos, whose commander ordered them to take objectives by stealth and guts, and to hold with skill and determination. These troops eased into Normandy in gliders. Dr. Carl Lindstrom, a surgeon with the U.S. 82nd Airborne, experienced a similar glider landing in Normandy.
Glider was definitely overloaded. And the glider, the glide was a fall. And it hit into some of the trees before we got to the field where we were supposed to land. The wings were knocked off the glider, and we sort of crash-landed.
The RAF was already bombing near the Canal de Caen, or Pegasus Bridge, so the German defenders failed to notice the three gliders sliding, sometimes crashing to a stop, until after the British soldiers burst from them, firing as they took the bridge in only a matter of minutes. Now they had to wait for a link-up with forces coming in on Sword Beach and repulse any counterattack the Germans might mount. That part of the job would take hours.
Are passing over the invasion fleet. Bats can hear the roaring of their motors. 36, 38 planes against the wind that's rushing through the rigging in this mast top.
The first troops were landing near key Normandy villages. In the channel, troop ships were closing in on the French coast. What would meet this Allied force? Were the Germans ready to repulse the invasion? Historian Will Cavanaugh says while the years of planning and training were vital to Operation Overlord's success, luck played a major part.
For a number of reasons. First of all, or basically the weather. The timing from the Allied aspect, it had to do with tides, it had to do with the moon, it had to do with the hours of daylight. There are a number of elements that on the Allied side dictated when it should take place. As far as the Germans went, it was prevented from taking place by bad weather. And if it hadn't have taken place on June the 6th, and the weather had turned bad June the 7th, 6th, 7th, etc., then it's doubtful that it could have taken place for months afterwards.
The German command felt General Eisenhower was indecisive, and the rain would prevent an invasion. The Germans' Field Marshal Rommel was so positive there would not be an attack, he went on leave to Germany, celebrating his wife's birthday. Even after the invasion was underway, Hitler refused to release panzer groups for an effective counterattack. The Führer thought the attack on the beaches at Normandy was just a feint.
We can see the wreaths of smoke that are beginning to puff up, both black and white, on the shoreline.
Reporters tagging along with the Allied forces knew better.
However, the landing beach craft are going in and are plowing through the choppy sea and seem to be making good headway.
This is the day and this is the hour. The sky is lightening. Lightening over the coast of Europe as we go in. The sky is lighter and the sea is brighter, but along the shore there's a dense smoke screen as the battleships and the warships, the smaller warships, sweep along there, firing all the time against the shore and some of them laying a smoke screen for us. The sun is blazing down brightly now. It's almost like an omen, the way it suddenly come out just as we were going in.
By this time, Bob Stalbores had already parachuted into France.
As we approached the town of Saint-Mère-Église, we knew the light would be going on in a minute, the green light, and we saw a tremendous fire. And we supposed that that was Saint-Mère-Église. We weren't sure. And as it turned out, the fire was an accidental fire. It was a big barn or something that had caught on fire, and they were trying to put it out, extinguish it at the time. Well, the green light went on and we jumped.
For some, it was a jump to death.
The Germans had flooded that area, that river, and it made it quite deep. And it, during the night when the some of the 508 jumped in that area, they were to jump on the other side, the west side of the murderette. Why, they landed, a lot of them landed, I shouldn't say a lot of them, but too many of them landed in the river itself, and they were so loaded down with equipment, they just sunk right down. So they figured that they lost about 100 men in that river that night.
Now, with the defensive forces just outside San Marglis, was John Baum.
And we fired with everything we had at the parachutes.
Baum's artillery battery had been knocked out in early shelling, and he had been reassigned with a German infantry unit near the strategically important town.
We had some people wounded calling for help, but we waited under the next morning in daylight broke. Then we went out, and when we came close to the people, we saw some dead people. We people who were wounded and people who were all right. Everybody put the arm up and gave up. Mm-hmm. We took about 10 or 15 prisoners. Everybody else was killed.
This fighting was in hedgerow country. Large mounds of earth, often topped by trees or brush, stretching for hundreds of yards. Bob Stalbury says hedgerows hid you from the enemy, but also hid the enemy from you.
The Germans were just as edgy as we were, because they didn't know where we were either. And they took their time trying to seek us out, and we were waiting for them wherever we could take a stand.
As dawn broke, the mist and fog hugging the sea lifted, and the German forces hunkered down in the bunkers and casemates of the Atlantic Wall could see the armada of Allied ships with troop carriers nearing the beaches.
We couldn't believe it. Thousands of ships from everywhere. And airplanes in the air. I mean, you couldn't stick your head up.
D-Day, Mission Liberation, will continue in a moment.